You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
National spring training rolls along down in West Palm Beach. Tim McMaster here, joined by MLB.com Nationals reporter Jamal Collier. Jamal, the World Baseball Classic is underway. The United States won't play a game until Friday, but some of the other teams already going, and obviously some Nationals players involved. Daniel Murphy, Tanner Roark, they'll play for the U.S. team. How excited are these guys that have left the team or are leaving the team shortly to represent their country, something baseball players don't often get a chance to do?
Yeah, Tim, they're both very excited, especially Tanner, you know, a guy who has never really competed in anything like this. Daniel Murphy hasn't either, but, you know, for Tanner to be invited and to participate on this team, just first of all, a validation of just kind of everything he accomplished last year to show that he does, you know, belong among some of the best players in the game that compete in this tournament and play for these teams. But, you know, they all both talked about how they're looking forward to, you know, getting a chance to play with the other players around the majors, pick their brains, learn something from them, and get a chance to compete, you know, really in games in early March. Are you kind of able to turn up the intensity? And especially that game in Marlins Park against the Dominican Republic on March 11th is already sold out. So, and Tanner's supposed to be pitching in that game. He's kind of excited for just the atmosphere that'll kind of bring. But so far, yeah, both guys seem pretty excited to be participating in this tournament.
Yeah, that game, absolutely the spotlight of the first round. You have the Dominican Republic, which is basically an all-star team, and they won it last time around. The United States has never won this World Baseball Classic, and for them to be playing in front of a sold-out Marlins Park, that's going to be pretty cool. Now, Max Scherzer was originally going to be a member of Team USA, but obviously with the knuckle injury, that isn't going to happen. He is slowly making progress, though, and I guess today he threw his first bullpen against live hitters. What's the latest on that, Jamal?
Yeah, big step forward for him to get out there, throw live batting practice, and you know, threw about 40, 45 pitches. With hitters in the box, which is, you know, for him, able to kind of simulate in between innings. You know, he kind of sat down and got back up and tried to do everything he could to kind of simulate a real outing. You know, I think the big thing for him also is he's still using that modified fastball grip where he's got three fingers on the fastball instead of the normal two. And, you know, he said he threw it today, didn't feel any obvious reduction in velocity or obvious change in stuff or control. So it's something that he's going to kind of keep moving forward with. And, you know, it helps him pitch without pain right now, and he's really not even trying to use the two-finger fastball grip at all. So it's becoming more and more real that he might get a chance to use that kind of modified grip in an actual game, at least in the spring here, to kind of test and see where it is. But definitely a positive for Max, like you said, to get out there and face hitters. And then normally this is one of the last steps before a guy gets into a spring training game or gets into back into game action. So they haven't set a target date just yet as far as when they want him to return and pitch in games. But so far, you know, everything is kind of pointing to, as he comes out of this well, that he could be making his debut here pretty soon.
Now, is there a thought that he could abandon the two-finger grip altogether, or is this still just, okay, until it feels better, I'm going to go with these three fingers?
I think pretty much right now is until it feels better. You know, the Max obviously got relied on his fastballs a lot. Once that finger completely heals and he has no pain with it at all, I think he might go back to it. But he also said he's not even trying to do it right now. So as long as there is pain and as long as there is discomfort by the two-finger grip, he's pretty committed to using three fingers and doesn't think there's going to be any kind of ill effects from it.
All right. As for other starters on this Nationals club, Gio Gonzalez pitched on Sunday, three scoreless in his second start of the spring. And I think a key to his start, Jamal, is the fact that he was able to get his breaking ball over for strikes. And for Gio, when the control is good, he's generally good, but that's one of his more inconsistent things. So to see it there this early in the spring has to be a good sign.
Yeah, it's been pretty encouraging the first couple of outings for Gio so far. He's kind of been speeding through them so far. He's been kind of so efficient in his pitches that he's, you know, had a chance to have an extra inning or, you know, kind of thrown a little bit extra on the side. So, you know, obviously it's still early and it's still spring, but right now they've seen some encouraging things for Gio. And like you said, the command is the biggest thing for him. He can avoid, you know, longer innings and walks and those kind of things usually when he's most effective. So, you know, he can be a big piece of this rotation if he can kind of bounce back from the year that he had last year. So far everything's pointing in the right direction.
Matt Wieters is obviously on this team now, but he hasn't gotten into any games yet. What's the latest on that? What's his time table. Obviously, he got to spring training late because of the late signing. When can we expect to see him in a game?
Yeah, still a few days away. He didn't really have. We spoke to him a little earlier here on Tuesday, but he didn't really have an exact date in mind or an exact date he was shooting for. He still kind of says he's a little bit of ways away. He got to catch Max's live BP today, which was, he said, was beneficial just because he has a chance to, be back there when you have a hitter and you have hitters swinging. He said just to get used to where you're not flinching every time when you got a guy swinging a bat right in front of your face, out there. But he still is a guy who wants to get a little bit of familiarity, should say, with all the pitchers and get a chance to kind of get his own swings out there. He kind of guessed that he needs probably like about 20 or 30 at bats from both sides of the plate before he really feels comfortable and ready to go. So we're still got time for him to get those things accomplished. But, like you said, the days are kind of ticking away here where pretty soon he's going to have to start getting into games and catching multiple innings out there.
Obviously, one big thing this team has to still figure out is who's going to close out games in the ninth inning. And Dusty Baker talked a little bit about that this week, saying not really any closer to naming that guy. And obviously, there's still a long way to go as far as spring training goes. And you're going to monitor the guy's health. And Joe Blanton joined the team late. Maybe he's in the mix. But I thought it was interesting that Baker did, Jamal, speak a bit about what he's looking for, the makeup that he wants to see in the closer that he's going to choose.
Yeah, I thought the same. I mean, it's like you said, it's tough to really duplicate how the intensity of a late game save situation during spring training. For the most part, usually you're bringing your relievers in to the fourth or fifth or innings of games or so, just because that's when most starters are getting ready to leave, and you don't see guys kind of play or if you have them sit around and wait to the ninth inning. Then they're going to start facing minor league and kind of not as good a competition as they would earlier in a game. So yeah, I thought it was interesting to say that, necessarily what happens during the games might not be the be-all, end-all. It might just kind of be about who looks the best and who has the right makeup and has the right kind of guts to handle the job. I think that's going to be a kind of an inexact science that he's going to have to go about naming it. And also he's going to, lean on his catchers and guys like Wieters to say, okay, what guys have you been catching in the bullpens that you think really can handle and do this job and get it done? So, a lot of interesting stuff from Dusty as far as what he thinks, will make up the right guy for this job.
And he also shot down the thought of a bullpen by committee or a closer by committee. It's going to be one guy, just we don't know who.
Yeah, and he's traditionally never been a fan of that. I remember last year, even when Papelbon was either on the DL or eventually kind of lost a closing role there right before the trade deadline, where Dusty was not too thrilled to have to kind of to pick and choose depending on matchups. He was saying, I'm going to have one guy, so people aren't kind of guessing when the phone rings down there who's going to be up.
One more topic for you, Jamal, and that is Ryan Zimmerman made his debut on Friday. Obviously, he's a guy with plenty of question marks surrounding him after the year he had a year ago. But he's a guy that this team could really use a big year from and a bounce back season from. Obviously, he's a guy with pride that wants to be great again this season. How does he sound when he's speaking early in the spring? You see him out there a little bit on the field now getting into games. Does he sound like a guy who's determined to kind of get things turned around?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He's worked very hard in the spring to whether he's making adjustments and getting in shape and kind of doing the things he needs to do to get right. I mean, he thought he's not coming off any kind of injuries or anything at the end of the season. I think that's going to be major for him, that he's able to have a regular, normal spring. He's also a guy who at the beginning of March is still kind of, just finding himself. He's only played maybe three or four or five games so far. And he's a guy who does take some at-bats to kind of get ready. So he's like, hey, man, but depending on what happens earlier on, and this, I'm not really reading too much into these kind of swings, that I'll be taking on March, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 5th, 6th, 7th. The biggest things for him will be, how's he feeling late March? Does he feel like he's starting to hit his stride and get ready to start the season on time? So right now he's kind of, like you said, progressing along perfectly as to where he wants to be. And it will probably start ramping up the intensity a little bit here in the next couple weeks.
Plenty of interesting storylines to continue to follow with this Nationals team as we get closer and closer to opening day around the major leagues. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Nationals edition. For Jamal Collier, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Mets reporter, Anthony DiComo. And, Anthony, we got to start this podcast. We got to start with talking about Tim Tebow. Standing ovation after grounding into a run-scoring double play in his first game on Wednesday. Overall, 0-for-3 with two strikeouts. I know there's a lot going on with the Mets, and we'll get into all of that, but Tebow always seems to grab headlines, so we might as well play right into that here on the podcast. Was it kind of a surreal environment with Tebow getting as much cheering as he did for a not-so-great performance?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you take a step back and look at the situation, you're talking about a minor leaguer from minor league camp coming over, hitting into a double play, striking out twice, getting picked off first base, going to the wrong batter's circle at one point while Rick Porcello was warming up, and yet everyone loves the guy. So, yeah, it was a little surreal. It was not something I've ever really seen before on a baseball diamond, which I suppose is to be expected when you talk about Tim Tebow and what he's trying to do here, because frankly, he is trying to do something that we haven't really seen before in a professional atmosphere. So it was a weird day, an interesting day. And then you talk to Tim Tebow when he gets off the field and greets all of us in the media. And, you know, he's just an engaging guy. He really seems like he's putting everything he has into this. And I think that's a big reason why people are rooting for him and people are cheering for him and people are getting behind him. And there is a minority of fans, I would say, who hate the whole experiment and hate the whole thing and hate the fact that he's taking a spot that maybe another prospect could have used and all of that. And I think everyone gets that. But there's also a very large population of fans, I'm realizing, that care very much, or at least are very curious and want to see him play and want to see him do well and want to see him succeed. And, you know, he didn't do that yesterday. He didn't play well. He didn't succeed. But he got cheered nonetheless. I think that says a lot about the guy and his reputation and what fans think of him.
Yeah, and I think that would quickly change if there was actually expectations on this guy from the fan base. But I think they kind of don't expect him to do well. So when he doesn't do well, they're just happy that he's there. And like you said, this is a guy who has just developed fans over the course of his football and now baseball career. All right, on to the guys who are going to be a part of this team in 2017. As the starters have started making their first and second appearances of the spring, obviously it was a slow start getting them involved, hoping they're in it for the long haul. Matt Harvey, not great his first time out. Jacob DeGrom got out for the second time today, actually just recently as we're recording this on Thursday afternoon, and he has looked great. He hasn't given up a run yet, Anthony. Four innings in his second appearance. Were you surprised he was out there as long as he was on Thursday?
No, because when you're pitching that well, you know, it's easy to get a lot of innings in a small number of pitches. Jacob DeGrom has looked sensational. Of all the Mets starting pitchers, I would say he looks by far the best. And that's not that the others have looked bad necessarily, but Matt Harvey was lacking velocity in his first start, which isn't a current concern yet, but could be down the line. You know, Noah Syndergaard has actually been ill, and I think you might have seen a little bit of the effect of that in him giving up a bunch of hits and a walk his last time out, not lasting through the end of his third inning. You know, Steven Matz was working on his pickoff move. We've only seen him once so far when we're recording this podcast, and it was a pretty brief outing. So Jacob DeGrom has looked the best and has looked great, and I think that's an awesome sign for the Mets because, you know, we talked about coming into camp all of these guys, and DeGrom certainly in that group of pitchers who are coming off surgery, and these aren't your standard run-of-the-mill surgeries. Jacob DeGrom got his elbow opened up to physically move a nerve. That's not a fun procedure, but it is something that, you know, Jacob DeGrom clearly looks recovered from, and he's got all his velocity, and it's what you want for the Mets, and it's what they hope for all of their pitchers. But this early in spring, DeGrom looks to be the one who's progressing the best.
You mentioned Syndergaard, and funny thing that kind of came out this week is that he's trying to be more like Bartolo Colon. And of course, if you put those two guys next to each other, that couldn't be that would be impossible, basically. But I guess what he's talking about is his landing and something that he's noticed from Colon that Colon does really well.
Yeah, and you know, people like to poke fun at Bartolo Colon's weight and all of that. You know, Noah Syndergaard said the one thing he noticed was despite the guy's bulk, when he was warming up in the bullpen before games, he would look down at the dirt in front of the pitching mound and see that Bartolo Colon was landing so lightly on his foot that he would look down and there would barely be a mark in the dirt, and you couldn't even tell. You know, some pitchers really dig in and they create this hole when they're pitching off the rubber, and it wasn't so with Bartolo Colon, and he thought that was the big reason why his mechanics or at least pointed to the fact that his mechanics were so clean and he was just able to control the ball as well as he does, in large part because of that. So it's something that Noah Syndergaard is working on this spring. He's working on kind of refining his mechanics, and despite the fact that he hit 100 miles per hour in that game and was ill, nonetheless, dealing with some flu symptoms, Noah Syndergaard says he really hasn't gone much beyond 85 to 90% so far this spring because he's working on things. And that's a good sign from someone who's a young pitcher still, someone who's still in really one of his first few major league camps here, that he doesn't really care about results. And you don't want guys to care about results at this point. You want them to care about getting better, and Noah Syndergaard's certainly trying to do that.
How about that fifth starter job? Is there any update just as far as those guys go and where everyone stands at this point in the spring, a couple of weeks in?
Yeah, it's a little early to tell because guys are on different pages. That fifth starter competition for the Mets, you're talking about Zach Wheeler, who hasn't pitched yet. He's going to make his debut on Friday, which is much anticipated because he hasn't started a big league game since having Tommy John surgery 2 years ago. It's been a long time. So the Mets will be anxious to see him. Seth Lugo we saw a lot of early because he was gearing up to pitch in the WBC, and he'll be doing that soon. But because of that, he was ramping up much earlier than the Mets' other starting pitchers. And then there's Robert Gesellman, who's the one guy who's kind of on a normal schedule, hasn't pitched great so far this spring, but is probably the leader in the clubhouse just based on what he did last year. So I don't think it's anything we can talk about definitively until a couple of weeks from now when all of those guys have multiple starts under their belts. We need to see what Zach Wheeler looks like health-wise. We need to determine if it's going to be enough for the Mets to want to take him on the opening day roster, or to say, hey, you know, this guy hasn't pitched so much, maybe we'll start him out in extended spring training or something like that, and limit his innings that way. Asking me today, right now, I still think in a way it's Robert Gesellman's job to lose, but Seth Lugo and Zach Wheeler could certainly make runs at it as well.
Jay Rhys-Familia has gotten out a couple of times in pitch. Not sure if he'll get in today or not, or what his next time out will be. First time out, some struggles. Second time out, he looked better. Has he talked much about having to get ready for this season and throwing these innings, not knowing what's going to happen at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange situation for him, because he doesn't know if and when that MLB suspension is going to come down. I think people around here are assuming it's going to be about 30 days, wiping out most or if not all of his April. But we don't know that for sure yet. And B, he had to gear up pretty quickly, regardless of all of that, to get ready for the WBC. He's left now. He's looking to pitch for the Dominican Republic and those games down there in Miami. So he had to get ready pretty quickly. And then it's kind of that old hurry up and wait. He'll pitch in the WBC games. He'll pitch again for the Mets when he comes back down here. But after that, he might be out for a while. So it's kind of a strange situation. All the Mets can do, and all they are doing, is saying, well, look, we have to get him ready for the season one way or the other. They fully intend on doing that. And if Jiris Familia's opening day winds up being May 1st instead of April 3rd, so be it. The Mets will have him ready for whenever it might be.
One more topic for you, Anthony. Jay Bruce. This is not the Jay Bruce we saw when he started his Mets career after the trade deadline in 2016. He is off to a tremendous start to the spring. How important do you think that was to him, or is to him, after the struggles that he had back in August, for him to get this nice start heading into the year?
Yeah, I think it's important. And frankly, I think what he did in September towards the end of the season was important, just kind of getting back on track. Jay Bruce was joking recently about people talking about how he had a bad season in 2016. And he says, I look at my baseball card and I hit 35 homers and 100 plus RBIs. If that's a bad season, I'll sign up for a bad season every year. He actually was pretty consistent. If you take out that August, which admittedly, and Jay Bruce will admit, was not a good month for him. And, whatever the reason was, if it was the transition to New York, if it was putting too much pressure on himself, if it was just a slump, he's looking to just kind of isolate that and put that in his past. An off season of trade rumors, that's gone too now. Jay Bruce is the right fielder here, and he likes to say, I'm the right fielder until I'm not. I'm in the starting lineup until I'm not. And so far, the Mets have given him no indication that he's going to be anything but the starting right fielder. So for him to get off to a hot start this spring, he hit a home run Wednesday. That was big for him, and is hitting, really just hitting the cover off the ball in spring training and Grapefruit League play. nothing but a good sign for a Mets team that we'll be counting on, Jay Bruce, this season.
Great stuff, Anthony. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Mets edition. For Anthony DiComo, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Marlins spring training rolls on in Jupiter, Florida. I'm Tim McMaster, and Joe Fusaro, our MLB.com Marlins reporter, joining us on the podcast. And Joe, you look at this team as they get closer and closer to the start of the regular season, and obviously now a bunch of players leave the team for the World Baseball Classic. Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich, Martin Prado's playing for Venezuela, Edinson Volquez for the Dominican Republic. When all those guys were getting ready to take off and join their respective countries' teams, was there kind of an excitement and a pride going on when you talked to them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Christian Yelich just got a new package of bats from Louisville, which had the kind of red, white, and blue theme. He was quite impressed with those, and he's going to use them, or at least try them out in some games in the Classic. Doesn't know if he could use them in the regular season, but he even brought some of his original bats in case the feel isn't exactly the one he likes. But, you know, things like that. I'm sure Stanton, who's always big with the compression sleeve, you know, he kind of one of the ones early on in the forefront of those bright colored compression sleeves since he broke in 2010. I'm sure he'll have like a red, white, and blue type of theme on that he wears. Volquez excited, and he might be getting what's the game to start against the United States on, I think it's Saturday. So, you know, he's excited, and Prado's been, you know, just quietly productive and, you know, locked in and having a good spring, and I'm sure he'll go to Mexico and help Venezuela win a few games as well. So, you know, those guys, they're looking forward to it. You know, there's something. Like they always note, you know, there's nothing like representing your country.
Yeah, and on a U.S. team that doesn't have Mike Trout and doesn't have Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton really, I think, kind of becomes the face of that team as far as young star power in Major League Baseball. He's really a guy that's going to get a lot of attention, I think. As far as attention in camp with those guys gone, Don Mattingly gets to see some other guys go a little bit. Guys like Brandon Barnes, Matt Dendecker, Tyler Moore. I mean, there are some opportunities created by the World Baseball Classic for other guys.
Oh, no question. I mean, you're going to have the Marlins. They're not just looking for, you know, depth in their big league roster. They're looking at AAA depth. And like you noted, Barnes, Dendecker, Tyler Moore, these are guys that are going to get extended looks. They hope that, you know, all will be available. That, you know, if they don't make a big league club, that they go down to New Orleans to start the year. I believe they all three have out clauses. Moore especially is a guy I'm kind of keeping my eye on, Tim, because right-handed hitting first baseman, they haven't played in a little left field, and I still kind of think the team's leaning toward a four-man bench, but, you know, Justin Bour doesn't have that, you know, true right-handed complement. They're talking about Real Muto going over there, but he has yet to do so. You know, in the game, and we're halfway through camp. So, you know, that's a guy I'm kind of keeping my eye on to see if Moore can, you know, raise some eyebrows and continue. Yeah, I've seen guys, Tim, in the past, you know, guys with big league experience look good the first 2 or 3 weeks, when, you know, before they're being game planned for, when they may come in a little more locked in, a little more motivated. And then, you know, those final 10 days when guys start getting ready for the season, you know, you see them really taper off and they don't really, you know, become what you thought they were at least early on. So it's still, you know, too early to evaluate production and results right now. But no question there are guys like that the organization hopes, you know, adds depth and, you know, these guys might be counted on at some point.
You mentioned Volquez pitching for the Dominican Republic, and so he's a little more stretched out than maybe he would be if it wasn't for the World Baseball Classic. And his final tune-up was a pretty good one, Joe. 3 1/3 innings, 2 hits. He gave up a run, but a couple of strikeouts. There's a lot that's going to be on him as far as pressure in this team when you think of him coming and joining this rotation, and a rotation that kind of lacks the ace, obviously, that it used to have in Jose Fernandez. But he's a veteran guy, and he seems early on in spring to already be in a good place.
Yeah, Tim, the more I talk to this guy, the more I get to know him, the more you like him. You know, the guy is, you know, he's upbeat. You know, he's a real pro's pro. You know, I was talking to him the other day about, you know, kind of, you know, no stage being too big. I mean, keep in mind, this guy's been an opening day starter, I believe, last year for the Royals against the Mets when they opened in the rematch from, you know, obviously the World Series in 15. You know, he pitched in the World Series, you know, and won, you know, so been part of that environment. This guy has pitched in the World Baseball Classic. You know, he's kind of been at all the stages. And he noted back in, I think it was 09, he said, when he was pitching for the DR in the Classic, and Pedro Martinez came up to him. And he was kind of, Pedro was kind of asking him stuff like, okay, you're getting ready now, but what are you going to do to get ready in the season? How are you going to kind of bridge some innings? How are you going to kind of get through some trouble? And so this guy, you know, he's got so much insight and, you know, experience. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he's, you know, saddling up next to Pedro Martinez is, you know, he's getting such valuable, you know, information that he got then and kind of helps prepare. I mean, he doesn't wow you. He's up to 98, 91 to 93. He's got that hard sinker. He's going to compete. And, you know, I'm sure for the DR, he's going to be real motivated. They're looking to repeat as champ of the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, I'm sure in the ideal world for the Marlins, he has a good, you know, classic, and he comes into the season, you know, pretty sharp. And the Marlins certainly are going to need that.
A.J. Ellis was hoping to play for the United States. He's out because of a hamstring. He's making progress. Jeff Locke also, I guess, making progress. Ichiro is back on the field in games again. Overall health of this team, Joe, seems pretty good at this point.
Yeah, except for, they don't have a ton of depth, and the guys that are going to be on their bench are all dealing with something. And you have to feel for A.J. Ellis. You know, he was really looking forward to going to the World Baseball Classic, wearing the United States jersey. He's getting up there in terms of age and doesn't know if he'll ever get an opportunity again. And that was giving him a chance to kind of get acquainted with his new ballpark at Marlins Park in that first round. And, you know, you really feel badly for him. He tweaked the hamstring about 10 or so days ago, and, you know, not even in the game. You know, he woke up in the morning, he caught a Brad Ziegler live then. He was running the bases, you know, about an hour later as part of a drill. Felt it then, and he was worried about him being ready for opening day, but, you know, he ran out of time to get ready for the Classic, and he's still not back on the field. But I think a guy like Ellis would need about a week or two to get ready for the season. You mentioned Jeff Locke. You know, that's a guy I would not be surprised if he opens the year on the DL. But, you know, the bigger issue is, and, you know, a veteran guy like that who they're going to need isn't so much being on the opening day roster, but making sure you're not missing him, you know, 6 months. If he misses a couple of weeks in April or even the whole month, and I'm not saying he's going to, you know, you can kind of live with that if he comes in, you know, after that point, healthy and ready to contribute. But, you know, the organization seems confident. It's not a serious issue. They're calling it left bicep tendonitis, which is just inflammation. And, you know, biceps is in the meat of the bicep. It's almost like in the shoulder area. So, until he really gets going, we don't really know what to expect, except for they don't think it's, you know, serious, you know, where he'll lop him off a half a year or so. And, you know, Ichiro missed that time after the collision in an outfield drill. You would have liked to have seen him playing just to get his timing going. He's in there again, but, you know, he's even being kind of, you know, brought along more slowly, getting a start here and, you know, sit a day, that type of thing. But, you know, as we approach these final 3 weeks of camp, I'm sure Ichiro will get enough work. And you just, you know, he's 43 now. You want to see the signs that there's no slowing down and, you know, missing, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever it was, wasn't the ideal way for him to start camp.
One more guy I wanted to talk to you about, Joe. Dylan Peters, number 5 prospect for the Marlins. He's not a guy who is going to make the opening roster by any standpoint, but young guys get a chance in spring training here. And last time out, 2 scoreless innings. He looked really good, and I guess he's really impressed his skipper, Don Mattingly, as well.
Yeah, he's going to get a start on Thursday. Team's off on Wednesday. It's their off day in camp. They just said he's going to get the start Thursday at the Nationals, and that would be an interesting test for him. I mean, he's a left-hander, throws 91-94. He threw 91-92 against the Braves, but he's been up to 93-94 already. As he noted, you know, number 5 prospect. a guy who I anticipate to be ready to contribute at some point this season. You know, he just has that look like he belongs to him. And, you know, it really got me when they faced the Braves up there. It's not that he went in and down and just dominated the Braves lineup, but what he did one inning, the second inning, he Freddie Freeman leads off with a double, you know, left on left situation. He takes him deep to center field. So he said, the next guy gets a ground ball to second, leads Freddie to third. He gets Mark Capers, you know, a guy who's given the Marlins pitch, and, you know, clearly a guy with a good, you know, track record in the big leagues, and a guy who's hard to strike out, a guy to, you know, hard to get swing and misses. He had a 9-pitch at bat within him. Count runs full. Marquez is fouling some balls off. He kind of pulls a string on a 78-mile-an-hour curveball. Just gets Marquez out front enough that he lets a real lazy fly to short left, not deep enough to score Freddie. And then he strikes out Adonis Garcia with a curveball. And that kind of moxie against big league players, you know, that was, to me, one of the more encouraging moments when you look at, you know, the team from not, you know, I'm not worried about Yelich or any of those guys, but trying to look to see who's coming up and could help at some point in the season. You know, that to me was an eye-opener, and you could see this kid competitive. And he went to the University of Texas, a 10th round pick a few years ago. Probably would have been higher, but he was dealing with an injury that dropped him a little bit in the draft. But a guy that looks like could be a contributor and kind of one of those sneaky guys that helps his team by the midpoint in the season if they need him.
Great stuff, Joe, and we will continue to watch him and all these Marlins as we get through spring training. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Marlins edition. For Joe Frisaro, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone. Braves spring training continues. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Braves reporter, Mark Bowman. And, Mark, some guys are injured. Some guys are coming back. That's just day after day, really, when you talk about spring training and guys getting ready for the season. But let's start with some good news for this Braves team or the future Braves team, and that is Ozzie Albies getting in his first game action of the spring on Thursday and looking good. Singling, he scored a run as well. How excited was he just to be on the field playing in a game again?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key. I mean, yes, it was certainly nice for him to throw straight back into the action. Getting that leadoff single, getting the ball hit right to him in the first thing. But, you know, the big thing is you go back to that moment, September last year, where he takes that check swing and fractures his elbow. You don't really know exactly not only how he's going to physically react, but I think a bigger, greater concern for me was mentally. You know, how hesitant would he be with his swings? And what we haven't seen is he entertained a few fans with that quote he gave me yesterday when I said, so, you know, you weren't hesitant. He said, no, I just went out and let it eat. You know, when he went out there and swung the bat. But, you know, hey, look, he's a 20-year-old kid that's has many years ahead of him, and he doesn't think about things like that right now. Maybe that us older guys worry about. So, yeah, he's healthy, and you know, looks like he'll start the year Triple A. And I do expect he'll be in Atlanta at some point this year. What does that mean, you know, for Brandon Phillips? You know, let's see how Phillips plays throughout the year. And but I'd say, you know, if you were asking who's going to be the second baseman at the end of the season, I think he's going to be looking at Ozzie Albies there.
Knowing that he's going to start the season in AAA, how much game action will he get throughout the spring before he eventually makes it down to the minors?
You know, I just because he's starting late, I could see him maybe even going all the way to that exhibition game against the Yankees in Atlanta. They'll probably take him out there, let him see the stadium, you know, enjoy that moment on March 31st, send him back to minor league camp at that point in time. But, you know, I think that he'll be able to get enough at bats here in camp. And on those days, maybe he's not. Maybe he gets a few plays in a sim game or something like that here and there to maybe make up for some bats. But I do expect to see him there, stick with the club, you know, throughout most of spring, probably all the way to the end.
A prospect that's a little farther away from the major leagues than Ozzie Albies is Austin Riley, but still a player that the Braves are high on. And Chipper Jones has worked with him in the past, I guess, Mark, but at spring training again, another chance to work with him. And it sounds like Chipper's a big fan of Austin Riley.
No doubt, no doubt. You know, the first guy that told me about Austin Riley was Bobby Cox about 2 years ago. He came down here for instructional league. I think that was 2015. And I, you know, talked to him a week or two later and said, "What'd you like?" Said, "This Austin Riley kid." You know, that was basically the start of it. Everyone else started talking about him at that point. You know, he coming out in that year's draft, he was a lot of teams are looking at him as a pitcher. He's a big body kid that, you know, he had that capability to be a pitcher, but the Braves sent Greg Walker out. He was scouting at that point in time. Let him see him play for a weekend, and Greg said, you got to get him as a hitter. And I think, you know, it's obvious already that was the right choice. You know, he did struggle last year the first half. He had five times more strikeouts than walks. But the second half, that ratio was down below three, and they hit 17 homers there down the stretch after the All-Star break there in the South Atlantic. But, you know, the test will come as he progresses, but it's good to see that, you know, Chipper's kind of working on that mental aspect with it and talking to him about what do you look for in plate approach, how do you prepare, little things. Just, you know, the techniques are there, the athleticism's there. He's losing some of that baby fat. He's going to see some better mobility there at third base. And, you know, I think that it's going to be interesting to see how quickly he comes. As Chipper said yesterday in that story, hey, look, this guy might be the guy protecting Freddie Freeman within the next couple of years. So Chipper certainly thinks that he could come really quickly.
Yeah, and Riley currently ranked number 13 in the Braves system, but that's a Braves system that's loaded with high-end talent. So not all top 30s, according to MLBPipeline.com, are created equal. Being in the 13 in Atlanta means you're likely in the top 10 pretty handily in any other system in the major leagues. All right, Sean Newcomb has been reassigned to AAA, something that was going to happen at some point during the spring. But in his brief time pitching with the major league club, Mark, he looked really good.
No doubt. You know, last week he pitched in Tampa. The line wasn't pretty. Four runs in an inning and six hits, I believe it was. Tyler Flowers is catching that game, basically say, look, don't just look at that line and expect it, or, you know, take that for exactly how he pitched. He said, you know, some of the young guys he faced were, you know, jumping on some pitches that you wouldn't see some other major leaguers attack. He did leave some pitches up in the zone, but what we saw from the other day, that command of that fastball, confidence to use both sides of the plate, that's kind of the guy that was the 21st ranked prospect this time last year overall. He slipped in MLB Pipeline's rankings to number 80, but he's got he's still pretty young, and I think it was very important for him to have an outing like that before he went back down to minor league camp to stretch out, you know, just from a confidence standpoint, given what he did experience last year in a few great league games and then last week against the Yankees.
Yeah, and the full line for that final outing versus the Phillies was he went two innings, he allowed a hit, he struck out four along the way, looking very good.
And three of those were looking, so that was a key.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. All right, on the injury front, Dansby Swanson dealing with a sore back. A.J. Minter also injured, nerve inflammation in his left forearm. Obviously, Swanson's going to grab the bigger headlines. Just a few days off, is that the expected recovery time for Dansby?
Yeah, you know, this was, as of this morning, talked to him, said he was going out to do some more fielding drills. Once they start doing that, you know, they're just a couple of days away. I mean, look, if this was April 10th, he'd be playing. It's March 10th, there's no reason for him to be out there, so I'm guessing he'll be back out on the field early next week, probably Monday. As for Minter, he played catch without any pain yesterday. Now the key will be once he gets off the mound, it, you know, has a different extension. Is it still the same way? So, you know, that'll be the key moving forward. But so far, so good with Minter. The one thing that you have to remember is this is not a product of or lingering effect from Tommy John surgery. This was just something that you know, just developed. He thinks he just kind of tried to impress early in camp and, you know, put himself in a bad position and, you know, inflamed some nerves there near the top of his forearm.
One more for you, Mark. We talked about Newcomb and how he looked in his last outing, and Lucas Sims actually on the mound right now as we record this podcast, not faring as well against the Mets in his first start of the spring. But overall, when you think about the young pitchers that are going to be likely or have a good chance to be on the opening day roster, has anybody stood out to you in the early going?
It's good to see what Newcomb and those guys have done. Obviously, those guys aren't – this next wave is not quite ready. You know, Max Fried has probably stood out as much as any prospect. You know, he's never pitched above the A-ball level, but you can see why he's going to come quick. I mean, you know, maybe this year's a little bit too optimistic, but I'd say, you know, at least by the beginning of camp next year, we're talking about him bidding for a rotation spot. He's healthy, and he's got that big curveball. You see why he draws comparisons to Cole Hamels. And, I'd say he's the one young pitcher who's probably stood out amongst everybody. But when you think about it, a couple years ago, you had Jason Hirsch and Lucas Simpson, the top prospects. And now, both Hirsch has already been cut, and really, Simpson really doesn't even get talked about around here anymore. That's just, that's not necessarily just a knock against them as much as it is just proof of the amount of better pitching talent that they've added over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's an impressive stable of young arms, and we're going to see them more and more. It's good to see them in the spring, but we'll see them down the road as well, and we'll track them through the minor leagues this season as well. Thanks a lot, Mark. Great stuff as always. This has been MLB.com Extras Braves Edition. For Mark Bowman, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, joined by Todd Zielecki, our MLB.com Phillies reporter, as we talk about Phillies spring training less than a month to go until the regular season gets underway, and lots of reason to be optimistic as far as this Phillies team goes. I'm not saying by any means we should suddenly say they're a favorite to make it to the postseason or anything, but young players are playing well early in the spring. That's what you want to see with a team in a rebuild mode like they are. Todd, let's start with Roman Quinn. Impressing so far, kind of in all aspects of the game, the defense, the offense, the stolen bases. How impressed have you been with the speedster so far?
I've been very impressed with Roman Quinn. I was impressed even last September when he got a call up and played a good handful of games late in the season. He's such a dynamic player. He's got incredible speed. He's a stolen base machine. He's not just kind of a light hitting singles guy. Like, he can hit some balls into the gap. He can pop a home run every once in a while, and he can clearly cover a ton of ground in the outfield. And what's also kind of cool about him and exciting about him is he's got a very, very strong arm. He threw a runner at the plate last September that was clocked at 96 miles an hour on StatCast. It was the strongest throw by any Phillies outfielder all season long. So he really can do a lot of things. And quite frankly, if Roman Quinn had not had the injury history that he's had in his minor league career, he basically has been unable to stay healthy at any of his minor league seasons. If he had been kind of more of a workhorse, more of an Ironman type guy, I think there would have been a pretty decent shot that he could have opened the season as the Phillies' opening day right fielder. But because he has been unable to stay healthy, the Phillies didn't want to get caught in a situation where, they're really, really shorthanded like they were early last season when they had to start journeyman Cedric Hunter in left field on opening day. So they went with Michael Saunders. But if Roman Quinn goes to AAA, which he will to start the season, and he plays really, really well, I think there's going to be a lot of people very, very eager to see him up sooner rather than later.
Have they done anything in particular this spring to try to just keep him healthy?
He stayed in Clearwater in the offseason or for much of the offseason and worked with the Phillies' strength and conditioning guys just to kind of, some different workout routines, different workout programs to kind of keep him, stronger, looser, more flexible, to avoid those, hamstring pulls, groin pulls, anything like that. This guy is he's really in phenomenal shape. Probably like 2% body fat, it seems like. So I think it's more of a staying loose thing. But he said he thinks it has helped him. But again, it's early March. Let's talk again in July or August and see if Roman Quinn has been playing every single day in AAA. Then we'll know that it worked.
Mike Schmidt is around Philly's spring training, doing some broadcasting, I think also helping out with the team as he's done in the past. And he had some interesting comments over the last week, Todd, about Michael Franco and just the fact that he thinks this is a guy who could be an MVP, which I think the Phillies would be psyched if this was a guy who you could just chalk in at third base and maybe batting third or fourth in the lineup. But Mike Schmidt thinks very highly of the young third baseman.
He does, and I think Mike Schmidt sees a little bit of himself in Michael Franco in this sense. Maybe not, he's not as solid defensively as Mike Schmidt was. I mean, Mike was a perennial Gold Glove winner at third base for the Phillies. But in the sense that, Mike, if you look back at Mike Schmidt's career, his rookie season, he was pretty bad offensively. He hit about 198, showed a lot of power, but really not a lot of plate discipline. And then, of course, obviously, he figured things out and is in the Hall of Fame, got hit over 500 home runs. You know, Mike Elfranco had 25 home runs last season, 88 RBIs, but he also had a 730-something OPS, which really, I think I looked this up a few weeks ago, out of like 20 qualified third basemen last year, he was ranked 18th in OPS. That ain't going to get it done. So if he can go to the plate with a better approach, you know, I think Mike Schmidt looks at him and says, this guy's got all the talent in the world. If he can go to the plate with a better approach, he should be able to hit 30, 35 home runs, knock in 100 RBIs, and have an OPS of 850 or better. And if he can do that, then the Phillies, I think, are going to feel really good going forward about who their number three, number four hitter is for the next several seasons.
So you have Schmidt hanging around talking to hitters, and then I guess you're going to have Roy Halladay coming back as a guest instructor talking to the pitchers. He hasn't done that since back in 2014. What was a difference maker or a deal maker as far as Halladay wanting to come back to Clearwater and talk to the guys?
You know, I think it's just he spent a couple years away from the game, and he's always kind of had the itch to do it. He's talked about maybe helping on the mental skills side of the game, but certainly he also can help pitchers on the mound. And so, you know, Phillies and Halladay have been talking for some time about finding him a role, and they met early last week, a little more than a week ago, to discuss that. So he's going to be in camp, I think, intermittently this spring as a guest instructor, popping in for a few days here and there. But to me, what's also interesting is that it sounds like it could be more than just a spring training guest instructor role, that because he lives nearby, he's a very, very short drive from Spectrum Field here in Clearwater. He could pop in throughout the minor league season and work with the pitchers and, you know, in the Clearwater Threshers, the Gulf Coast League Phillies, you know, anybody that's maybe coming down for rehab. So he could be kind of more involved than I think people think. The logistics haven't been ironed out yet completely, but hey, if you can have Roy Halladay in camp helping out pitchers on the, like I said, on the mental skill side or stuff on the mound, it certainly cannot hurt the young Phillies pitchers, you know, as they kind of build toward the future.
Especially when you look at the young pitchers on this team and the ability to soak in information that they could get from Halladay. And speaking of those young pitchers, so far through the spring, as we, you know, we've played over a week's worth of games here, Todd, has any of those young pitchers stood out above the rest to you?
The one guy that has stood out is Aaron Nola, but I say that in the sense that he stood out because so far he's been healthy, and his health is a big part of this team's rebuilding plan. You know, he finished last season on the disabled list with the injured right elbow. He rehabbed from it late last year, and in October went home healthy, and then so far in camp everything has been good health-wise. He says he's felt good on the mound, and the Phillies are really keeping an eye on him. You know, Pete McCannon has said, listen, I I'm excited that he's healthy. If he's healthy, he's going to be in this rotation. But, you know, they also know that elbows can be tricky. So, but if he can be healthy and kind of return to form like he was pitching early last season, the Phillies really like the possibilities they have in the rotation. In fact, Jeremy Hellickson said about a week or two ago, if Aaron Nola is our number five, that means he's got a really good pitching staff.
The World Baseball Classic is underway, and most of the players that are heading to U.S. rosters and other teams' rosters have kind of left their teams. And Pete McCannon, I guess, sees some upside to this, Todd, as far as just getting to see some other key guys get some extra at-bats. And I guess as a manager of a major league club, you kind of have to embrace this tournament every 4 years.
Yeah, you do. And I think for Pete, it does help him out a little bit. You know, you have some of these players, you know, Odubel Herrera is going to be gone for a few weeks possibly. Allows you to see a lot more. Play Aaron Altair more in center field. He's give Roman Quinn a little bit of a longer look. Some of these relief pitchers are going to be gone. Hector Neris, Pat Neshek. So now you get to see some of the other, you know, arms in camp that maybe could be competing for a bullpen role, if not maybe to open the season. You know, if there's an injury early in the season, you know, now you know, okay, I like what I saw from this guy in camp while Neshek and Neris and those guys were gone. I'm pretty confident in him. Let's call him up. So there are definitely some advantages to having some of these guys gone. And, you know, Freddie Galvis was supposed to go to play in the World Baseball Classic, but he had a little bit of a groin thing, he said, early in camp. And so he stayed back. But kind of an offshoot of that is probably good for Freddie Galvis that he's here in camp, because if Freddie Galvis had gone, it would have given J.P. Crawford a much longer look. And Freddie Galvis is going to be fighting for a job this season. He really needs to play well to kind of hold off J.P. Crawford. So there's also a flip side of that as well for guys that were supposed to go and aren't going.
Todd, Paul Hagan has a story. Your friend Paul Hagan has a story on Phillies.com right now about Pete McCannon and his, I guess, focus this spring on kind of the finer points of the game and the little things and the fundamentals and how to agree he can lean on some of the veteran guys the team's brought in to help with that as well. How much of a focus have you seen on that in your time around camp?
You know, I have seen a focus on it. Pete's been talking about this for some time. One of the more interesting things he has talked about this spring and even in the offseason is teams are employing a defensive shift so often now. For guys that are notorious pull hitters, you know, you kind of want some of these hitters to, you know, work on going the other way. Slap a single to left field every once in a while if the defense is loaded up on the right side of the field. You do that a few times, you give away, you know, put a couple guys on base, maybe they stop playing the shift so much, and now when the guy does pull it, you know, it's not an automatic out. You saw it happen for years and years and years for Ryan Howard. You know, he had so many singles taken away from him, because he just could not, you know, poke that ball to left field. And so I thought that was a point of emphasis for Pete. And it's kind of interesting that that's one of the things that they've been talking about.
Great stuff. As always, Todd, this has been MLB.com Extras, our Phillies edition. For Todd Zalecki, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.